Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, October 24th. I'm Ray Graff. Say, are you in the market for a new home or do you plan on listing your property for sale? Well, boy, are you in luck. We have two real estate professionals in the studio with us today to answer your questions. Alexander Monticello of Monticello Real Estate and Renata Lewis of Keller Williams Capital District are waiting for your questions. If you have a real estate question, give us a call. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, our number, and you know, for Pete's sake, it's a call-in show, 800-348-2551. Renata, Alexander, real estate, your call's coming up right after the news. Hello again, my friends. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Are you buying or selling a home or residential property? Well, if so, this is the show for you. We have two real estate pros in the studio to answer your question. Alexander Monticello of Monticello Real Estate is here. He specializes in residential sales for buyers and sellers in the Capital Region. Renata Lewis is with Keller Williams Capital District, also leads the Renata V. Lewis team. She's a go-to source for real estate industry insight and advice. Our number here is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. Alex and Renata, welcome to the show.
Thanks.
Thanks for having us.
Glad to be here.
I'm glad you navigated the parking situation
yes,
and you're
thank
here.
Thank you.
The email address is voxpop@wamc.org if you are shy and you don't want to call. But if you're outgoing and you want to call, this is the time. 800-348-2551 is the number. All right, real estate pros. Sales of new homes have fallen for the fourth straight month. The Commerce Department says newly built homes plunged 5.5% in September. The annual rate has dropped 15.3% since May. There is a 7.1-month supply of new homes on the market. That's the highest level since March 2011. You both look panicked.
I don't know.
That was not a really, really hysterical response.
I'm speechless, Ray.
I know. That scared me.
Yeah, I think things are slowing down a little bit, but I think in the Capital Region, just to provide a little bit more perspective, the month supply of inventory, I was just looking at that number in the Capital Region, it's 5.6 months
supply. Is that about right?
Yeah, they say six month supply of inventory is a balanced market. So technically, we're still in a seller's market according to that statistic.
About how many homes would we expect to sell in this market in a given month?
Oh, right. That's a good trivia question. I don't know off the top of my head. I think it's probably about maybe region-wide, which is nine counties, maybe 200 homes in a month.
Yeah.
Region-wide, yeah.
Okay, so 5 months supply, it's 1,000 homes.
Well, at the current rate at which homes are selling, yeah, it will take about 5 months to exhaust that,
okay,
that inventory.
But you have to consider we're also a little bit shielded in this area. So the big statistic that you just read was nationwide.
Why are we shielded?
The wave that's coming our way hasn't really hit. So I think most of those statistics are coming off the West Coast. Something that we are watching, and we're definitely feeling a little bit of a shift.
Yeah.
I don't think it's as significant as that number.
You know, and my producer, Jim Lavoulis, gave me this information, and it talks about the sales of new homes, but how many people are buying newly built homes? Why is this a terrible indicator when most people buy a home that's already been lived in?
Yeah, a lot of the inventory in the Capital Region isn't newly built because we have an older housing stock, but there's still... even the newly built homes in the Capital Region, I think if you talk to the local builders, they're behind in terms of the demand.
Mm.
Demand is exceeding the supply at which they can build. And part of that, I think, is for the last 5 or 6 years, they've been playing catch up with the demand and trying to secure land and develop it so that there are enough residential lots coming online.
True. The new construction is usually a big indicator. If they're doing really well, it's usually a very nice, it's a good market. When they start slowing down is when we are feeling that shift, and resale at that point could potentially pick up a little bit more. However, as Alex had said, the new construction is still fairly active in this area, and new developments are being opened regularly.
Well, you both did very well. I hammered you with some sobering news to start the show, and you both handled it with aplomb. Let's go to the phones. 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. We begin with Annie in Rosendale. You're on.
Yes, I want to ask if you have any advice how to find a buyer for a house that's in a good location, but it needs to be totally rehabilitated. Do you know of websites or, you know, I can't imagine that it's a thing that that a realtor wants to bring people to show the house to.
I missed the very beginning of that. Can you say that again?
Just some inside baseball, Annie. Alex forgot to turn up his headphones.
Sorry.
And Renata was helping him. So let's start again with that question.
Guys.
It wasn't
we haven't done this before.
Let's get the show here going.
Okay. I need to sell a house that's in a good area, but it needs to be totally rehabilitated. And I don't think it's the kind of place that a realtor would want to bring customers to. So do you have any suggestions for websites to list on, or how to find a buyer who rehabilitates houses?
Well, I mean, you do have some options. I mean, is the reason you don't want to fix up the house because there's no funds available for it, or is it just an option
The owner died, and I need to settle an estate.
Okay.
Sell this house.
So, I mean, just because it's not finished doesn't mean it can't be listed with a broker or a real estate agent. It will help you expose to more buyers. There are buyers out there and investors that will want to pick a property up like that for good value to give them the option of renovating it and reselling it in the future. If you try to do this on your own or throw it on a website, you may not get the top value for the property. And definitely I would suggest sitting down with a realtor or someone that has flipped homes before just to get a good idea of what your options are, where you should market the property, and what the market is valued at in its current state.
When you say who has flipped homes before, by that do you mean a realtor?
It could be a realtor, it could be an investor, it could be, you know, there's a bunch of numbers out there, hey, call this number, we'll sell your house. I think that you should really talk to several people, get a better idea of where you are, and then ultimately make a decision of what's best for you and where the best value is.
Okay.
Okay.
Thanks, Annie. We appreciate
good luck
the
to
call.
You.
Our number is 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. More inside baseball. Alex keeps looking at the screen where all the callers are. It's broken. So I'll just tell you who's
he's
calling.
He's very confused today.
It's okay. Just well, calm down, Alexander Monticello. 800.
It's been a rough day already.
800-348-2551 is the number. 800-348-2551. You said that magic word, Renata, flip.
Yes.
Is that a four-letter word in the realty business?
It is. It is. I mean, it could be looked at as, hey, let's make some money. It could be looked at, we really don't want to touch it because it's scary. So there is good value in a flip. Again, there's a lot of risk involved, and I think that anyone that's considering it really needs to do some education, get to know what's involved, because it's a lot more than you expect it to be.
The number here is 800-348-2551. Andrew in Poughkeepsie, you're on.
Yes, hi. I also similarly had a person pass away with a property that is in somewhat disrepair. But my main question was, the realtor has thrown out a percentage of 5-6% of the sale value. I was wondering, is there any negotiation to that, or does that vary from county to county?
That's a good question.
Other percentages that people can charge?
Yeah, actually, you know, percentages can vary greatly, and everything's negotiable. So, you know, I would encourage you, just like you are, and if you are hiring a different service, interview two or three other realtors and see what percentage.
So there's no set minimum?
No.
I mean, it's a question of what is the realtor's time worth and what are they going to put in terms of marketing and what kind of value are they going to add? I mean, I will say, right, I mean, with anything else, you may not always want to go with the lowest bidder, but I think you need to just analyze what is it that they're offering. Do you think the services that they're providing are worth it? And do they have the experience and the time?
So there is no set percentage rate.
No, actually, the federal government I think, regulates the there's antitrust laws that prevent realtors and brokerages from actually setting commissions.
Okay,
because that would be.
Thank you for the call. That's very interesting. So if I was selling a $20 million home, Renato or Alex might be willing to take 2% or 1% rather than a 5% on
Absolutely.
A lesser home.
Yeah, if you talk to brokers who work in New York City, for example, oftentimes the percentages are much lower because the prices of the home are much higher.
Very interesting. And you can shop around and say, hey, listen, Alex said 4%. Renato, what can you do for me?
Correct. Mm. You just have to be careful, too, because it is something that it is the help me out here, Alex. What's the not GCAR? It's what are the rules? We can't really discuss it.
Right.
So
yeah, for antitrust reasons.
Yes, antitrust. So like Alex and I, because we're two different brokerages, we can't say, hey, let's charge this, or if you charge this, I'm going to charge this, or find out where he's charging and try to beat him out just because of a, you know, commission dispute. And, you know, you really do need, it's like buying anything else. Shop around, see what they're offering, what the experience is. Is it something that they do when, if it is a home that needs a lot of improvement, how many homes that have they sold? How will they market them? How will they price them? And ultimately, it really is about the bottom line in your pocket.
Yeah.
It shouldn't really start, you know, how much are you going to charge me?
Our number is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. Real Estate Today, Renata and Alex here to take your calls. We'll be back. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here. It's 800-348-2551 if you want to join in the fun. And what is more fun than real estate? We have Renata Lewis here today and Alexander Monticello to answer your questions. And back to the phones we go. Harold in Fort Plain. Harold.
Hi. I found a property that was that has a reverse mortgage on it. And I talked to the people and they said it reached its limit and was sent to HUD. I really didn't understand it. They didn't understand what was going on. And I was wondering what the what I need to do and if there's any different thing that I need to do to purchase this property.
Are you currently working with a real estate agent or is there a real estate agent selling the property?
No, it's private sale.
Okay. Well, you know, the first thing you'll probably want to do is if you do make a purchase contract, you'd hire an attorney and they would do a title search to verify what the outstanding mortgage is. Is there any liens on the property? But it may sound like if it's been referred to HUD, there might be some sort of issue with a potential foreclosure because you know, if a property gets reverted back to HUD, I'm not as familiar with this, but this sounds like there might be an issue with somebody paying their mortgage or making payments on the reverse mortgage.
I've actually researched into this, and what happens is when the value was established for the reverse mortgage, say they valued the house at $100,000, and it's been 5 years, and now they've already been able to cash out that $100,000, and they're continuing to cash out on it, or they stopped cashing out on it, now the house technically is upside down. So they owe more on the house than the house is actually valued, and they may not be able to pay that back. This is why HUD has taken it over. So you need to figure out who to call. You need to speak to HUD. You need to see what red tape you have to get through to get to the right people, and whatever the difference is, you might be able to buy out the house for whatever is owed.
So perhaps a lawyer would be the best option at this point?
Probably, yes. Yes. I mean, you could try calling an 800 number, see how far you get with them. It really depends on how deep into the paperwork and into HUD it's already been in and what needs to happen next.
Great. Thank you very much.
Good luck.
Thanks, Harold. That sounds confusing.
It is. It is.
You need a magic eight ball for that.
They're not doing reverse mortgages for a reason right now.
Oh, they've stopped doing that.
A lot of them have stopped.
Interesting.
Yeah.
The number here is 800-348-2551. Renata Lewis and Alexander Monticello here to answer your real estate questions. We go to Sue at North Greenbush. Sue.
Hi. I was calling about my house. I had planned on putting it on the market this fall, but there was more work than I anticipated, so it's not quite ready yet. And it's probably going to be in the 200,000 range. I'm just wondering, what you see as the local market in maybe the spring. Is there any advantage to trying to rush through and get this on the market, say, within the next month, or wait till the spring?
Now, we've talked about this, the seasonal aspect to this whole thing, and I think there are differing opinions. Who wants to go first?
All right, let me go first. So, yes, there is obviously the spring market is when everybody gets their homes on the market. The big thing that I discuss with my sellers and my clients that may want to wait is when we enter a spring market, we have a lot more competition. So we are no longer leading the market. We may be following the market and doing what everybody else is doing. I would probably wait through the holidays just because it does slow down. And if you need some time, choose that time to get everything done. January, February, the winter market, not a lot of inventory out there. You as a seller can lead the market and price it maybe a little bit higher because there isn't going to be a lot of buyers looking, and you might be able to get a little bit more for your home at that point. So don't let the winter market scare you. I think it's a great time to get the house on the market. It's a new year. People are excited. Hopefully the interest rates don't go up anymore, and you should be in a good position.
Alex, you concur?
Yeah, I mean, I think a couple things to watch. Interest rates are rising a little bit, and if interest rates continue to rise, that could eat into the buyer's purchasing power. So I'd pay attention to interest rates. The other thing is, 2 years ago in December, we had a really busy December. That was right after the presidential election. For some reason, there was a lot of pent-up demand. I think where buyers were holding back. And then interestingly enough, between November 7th and January 1st, it got really, really busy. So I don't know, with all the attention on this election, if there will be a similar burst of buyer demand. But one tip I could give you is right now, when you get the sunny day, maybe tomorrow looks like it's going to be a sunny day, I would take some outdoor photos of the yard, the front of the house, the back of the house. So if you do decide to list ultimately in January, at least you have some photos where the grass is green.
So you don't really, thank you, Sue, you don't really want to take pictures with the snow piled up to the window?
You can if you have to, but it's always nice to show the green grass.
Right.
Very interesting. So that's a psychological, you've proven that this psychology works.
No, oh, pictures
no
matter.
Snow, please.
Well, certainly pictures matter in terms of selling the house. Yeah, I think.
Well, it works in reverse as well. If you see a listing in the summertime that has snow on it, good.
And it gets even worse if you have a pool, right? If you're trying to sell a house with a pool, it's ideal to sell it when it's 90 degrees in July.
Oh, you make a
open
point. Yeah.
Trying to sell
showing a house
the
pool with the cover is very attractive.
With snow on, not as easy.
All right, fair enough. Let's go to Robert in Greenfield. Robert, you're on.
Yes, I was just wondering, my partner and I, we decided he'd like his ashes spread around the property, but recently he's decided that perhaps he should just be buried on the property and I was wondering how that might affect the value of the property. It's a 5-acre lot, and there's no restrictions in the local government, so.
Ooh, I've never.
Don't all jump at once on this one.
I've never had that question.
I think there's two things to consider here: the value of the property and the wishes of your partner, and what's more important. Maybe that's the way to look at it.
I don't think that would be anything that needs to be disclosed, do you?
Well, if there's a headstone, people are going to figure it out.
Yes. But ashes are.
Well, no.
Go ahead.
We originally wanted ashes, but then cremation is a huge carbon footprint, so we thought perhaps just burying the body on the property in a green way.
Yeah, that may be a full disclosure, something that you may have to disclose when you sell the property, and it could be, potentially a little bit of a concern on the buyer end.
That's a new one, by the way.
It is. It really is a new one. I mean, I've had pets buried in the backyard. That's a little bit,
old oil tanks,
much different. Guess it would depend on the city, town, and county rules and regs. Maybe check into that first. Talk to some local realtors to see what they say. And again, I do agree with Alex, respect your partner's wishes and, do your due diligence on the value as well.
Okay, thank
Sorry,
you very much.
We couldn't be more helpful.
Thanks a lot. You know, I guess in the old days, it was fairly common. Yeah. This would be a normal thing to do.
True.
You know, I saw recently they are selling these pods now where you can be buried in a pod.
What?
And over it will be a tree.
Yes.
And so you can...
I'm sorry, what?
Yes.
Are you interested, Ray?
No, not at all. No. So it sounds nicer than my house.
I talked to your wife. Grow. She said something about the pod.
Yeah, she said a lot about burying me, that's for sure. Let's go to Richard in Greenwich. Richard, you're on.
Yeah, hi. I recently just purchased a home about 2 months ago. And at the closing, the owners disclosed that everything in the house worked perfect. I bought the house completely furnished, the couches and the chairs and so forth. They left. I closed on the house. They left, and only to come to find out that the washing machine didn't work, the stove didn't work, the refrigerator didn't work, the riding lawnmower that was sold with the house didn't work, and the whole house was full of cigarette smoke, and I had to throw all the furniture out, and so forth. Had to scrub and paint and pull all the carpets out. And do I have any recourse? Do I have? Is there anything I can do to?
So how did they? So a couple of questions. Did you actually have an opportunity to enter the house and inspect the house before you purchased it?
Yeah, it's quite interesting. I went through the house four times before I bought the house. There was no hint of cigarette smoke in the house. They had the plug-ins that's put out around the Glade mm-hmm. plug-in. And so the whole house smelled sweet and pretty and had potpourri and stuff. I had no, my mother with the nose that we can detect cigarette smoke 300 miles away came to the house and she didn't smell it at all. But then as soon as I unplugged all of that and got rid of the potpourri, it was wickedly overpowering.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Did you use an attorney when you purchased the property? Did you use an attorney when you purchased the property?
No, we didn't. We just went through the bank.
Okay. Well, you know, generally in New York State, it's a buyer beware state. So unfortunately, it can be really challenging to pursue these claims against the seller. If you can prove that the seller had knowledge, actual knowledge, that the appliances didn't work, they filled out a property condition disclosure saying that they were in good working order, you might be able to have a claim, but you have to be able to prove that the sellers had actual knowledge that the mechanical system or appliance wasn't in good working order. That can be hard to prove.
On the closing, there is that part that they have to sign that says, to your best of your knowledge, does everything fine work in condition? And then they had to initial that portion of the closing and put down that, yes, everything was working in great shape.
When you did your final walkthrough right before the closing, did you do a final walkthrough right before the closing?
I did, but I didn't turn the washing machine on. Right. I didn't turn the kitchen stove on. And
so that's a little bit on you, and I'm not saying that it was wrong or right. It's typically right before the closing, we have the final walkthrough. You know, I have a really nice checklist. I used to help my buyers through the checklist. I no longer do it. I want them to make sure that everything works, that everything turns on, that the furnace turns on. It's part of the final walkthrough that helps you guarantee that right when you sign on that dotted line, that all of those items are in working condition when you enter the home. So that doesn't seem like it had fully happened. And I mean, you could try getting a hold of your attorney and getting some, you know, speaking and having this conversation with him. It's going to be a tough one. It's a challenge to get them to do anything at this point. Yeah.
Mm, yes. There you go. I went on kind of a trust. These people are telling me the truth. I trust them.
Yeah.
And they're lying through their teeth.
Well, trust but verify. I think Ronald Reagan said that one time.
Well, congratulations on the purchase. And, you know, thankfully it wasn't a huge structural issue. And, as far as the smell, what are those ionic machines or whatever they're called?
Yeah, with the smell, yeah. Sometimes a fresh coat of paint, removing any of their drapes,
yeah.
And maybe
yeah.
Well, you can't refinishing paint the floors.
Yeah.
Get rid of their furniture. That's the biggest.
Yeah, that's.
But I mean, he bought the place saying, okay, I got the washer, the snowblower, everything else is working order. Now, this is interesting. By the way, we're joined today by Renata Lewis and Alexander Monticello. We talk real estate. The number is 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. Renata, you mentioned the final walkthrough. Typically, these are done on the last day, right?
Yes.
So you do the final walkthrough, and say you purchased all the appliances, and suddenly you realize, oh, gosh, the washer doesn't work. What are the odds that you're going to say this is a deal breaker or I want to renegotiate when the closing is 2 hours down the road? I mean,
if it doesn't work, there is credits that are happening at the closing.
Are they predetermined credits? In other words, is there a sheet that says, okay, here are the credits, or do you have to then negotiate again?
No, you can't. You know, you find out how old that washing machine was, and you get an estimate of, hey, we'll give you $300 at closing. I mean, the sellers could technically say no, and the buyers can walk away. They wouldn't at a small amount like that, but it's just extra protection. When you walk through that, you know, through that home that last
minute. I understand, but as a practical matter, who's going to walk away from a house sale because the washer doesn't work? In other words,
right? I think it's very unlikely, but there could be a potential delay in the closing. You know, they could say, okay, we want to get a delay because we want to get a repairman in there.
But that becomes a game of chicken then.
That's
correct.
You
say, you know what?
Yes.
I'm not going to buy this house.
And the seller says, okay, fine, let's just agree to a $300 credit or a $500 credit. Oftentimes, there's posturing at the table, but.
But all the paperwork is, by the time, I've done closings, by the time you sit there, all that paperwork is done.
It's prepared.
And
it's
so
not
then
signed.
What do you do? Tack on it? Okay, minus 300 on
well,
the sheet?
Well, usually there's a personal check that would be cut from one side to the other.
Oh, very interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, back to the phones. 800-348-2551. Harriet in Woodstock. Hello, Harriet.
Well, hello.
Hi.
I'm calling about the burial of a body on your property.
Yes.
One of my topics of interest.
Oh, good.
And well, I know a little bit. I believe you cannot... but it's against the law, as far as I know. You could find out much more simply by calling your local funeral home.
Mm.
It is possible to do it, but you do have to get special permission.
Ah.
And as far
that
as I know,
sense.
There is also a green burial society. I think there's. I'm sure you could find it on Google. There is a local one, I think, in Dutchess County, Green Burial.
Yeah.
There are different ways of burying a body, but local cemeteries have to be agreeable and, I think, certified to accept preparation of bodies for green burial, which is like no preparation. It means like a cardboard box
right.
or a cotton shroud or a linen.
Right. Throw the corpse in the ground and you're done, right?
But you can't do it in an un...
Well, that makes
certified
sense.
Cemetery. You have to, you know, they have to be part of this agreement because a source of pollution that has not been addressed or recognized is formaldehyde.
Yes.
It happens to be in all the bodies in the graveyard, and bit by bit the coffins disintegrate and then the bodies, and the formaldehyde enters. Enters the aquifer, the water table.
This sounds like a great advertisement for cremation. Is that what I'm hearing?
Well, no. Cremation is terrible.
Oh, okay.
In terms of use of you know, it's very polluting.
So what's the best way to do it, do you think?
I think it's okay to just... Well, we won't even go into what
no,
I think.
No, it's not.
I like the Tibetan system, which is you feed the body... The birds.
Oh, yeah. Well, Harriet, I got to say, this is one of the more interesting calls we've ever had on the real estate show. Thank you so much for calling, and we appreciate it very much. You see the things you learn.
Every day, something new.
I love the WAMC.
Thank you.
Listeners.
Harriet's a regular listener and a regular caller. Yeah, well, there you go. Now,
we have options.
Where the hell do we go from here? All right, let's take another call. Lisa in Rotterdam. Lisa, you're on.
Hi, I have a similar question, and good afternoon, everyone.
Hello.
Good afternoon.
I have a similar question to a gentleman that called just a little while ago. So I bought my house a year ago, and we did go through a lawyer, and we bought it through a short sale. Mm-hmm. And we, of course, we went through the bank and we had to have actually an inspection done on our house. We had to pay someone to come inspect the house structurally. It had a septic tank. It's got oil. And so, you know, it's an older house. And it passed inspection. It did well, and the sale went through. And so now a year later, here we are a year later, and we discovered this about a month ago, 3 weeks ago maybe, that the roof is leaking in a spot. And we also had a problem with the septic system that we had to pay a lot of money to fix. And none of that was found on the inspection of the house, certainly not the roof, and it's actually leaking in two spots. And I didn't know if there was any recourse or a course of action we should take or could take to maybe get some of that taken care of.
Well, I mean, a couple of thoughts, and just reiterating what I said to the other caller, New York is a buyer beware state. So do you know if the seller has provided a property condition disclosure statement?
I don't think they did.
Okay. So, you know, I'm not a, you know, if they didn't provide a property condition disclosure statement, I'm not sure there is any recourse. You know, the other complication you're going to have is one, proving that the defect existed at the time you purchased it. And then even if you did that, if the person has a short sale, it sounds like they weren't able to make their mortgage payments, had to get out of their house. You know, how even if you had a viable legal case, how would you actually get money from the seller? It sounds like they may not be financially capable.
So in a short sale, then the house is not being sold by the bank, but still by the owner?
The owner is selling the property, but he or she is doing it with the cooperation of the bank because the bank is going to take a haircut on their mortgage.
Okay.
But what I would say is just maybe check in with your attorney and see if they have any potential ideas. But it sounds like this one might be really difficult.
All right, Lisa, thank you for the call. And sorry we don't have better news for you. We have to take a quick break. 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. Alexander Monticello and Renata Lewis are here, and the home stretch on the way. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here. The number's 800-348-2551. Real estate on the program today. And Alexander Monticello and Renata Lewis are with us. This one came in via email and then back to the phones for the final moments of the program. Several moments to go, if you want to call, by the way. 800-348-2551, the number. This one came in from Mark. When buying a car, even a person with bad credit or no credit can find several lenders who are willing to work with them. Why does this not happen in the housing market, especially with supply being what it is? Where can a person with bad credit or no credit find a good lender? By the way, you know, if you're buying a $200,000 Maserati, it may be tougher to get that credit.
Right, correct. I think it really depends on why the credit is not good. Was there a bankruptcy? Was there unpaid debt? Is there too much debt to income? There are some lenders that will work with you with a lower credit score. However, if you're under 500, it's going to be pretty much impossible to get into a home. And the reason they do that is because when your debt and your credit to debt ratio is that low, you probably cannot afford a mortgage payment. And they don't want to put you in a home where you're going to default on the mortgage and not and be house poor and put you in that position. So much, much stricter. The housing market going back 10 years ago with the subprime was a big indication of what happens.
I'll just add that if you're looking to repair your credit, I think the Affordable Housing Partnership, which is a non-for-profit, offers those services. They might even be free.
Okay.
So that might be something you want to look into.
All right, Mark. Well, thank you for that email. Let's go back to the phones at 800-348-2551. And Teresa. Teresa in Albany is on.
Hi. Good.
Hi.
We had purchased a house in April. And we did have a property disclosure, and the sellers disclosed that they had had a bad baffle on the septic tank that had been repaired, and that the tank had been pumped a year prior to us purchasing the house. And the day we moved in, the septic system backed up into the basement.
Ugh.
And we've been battling with septic system problems since then. We had to replace the pipe that went from the house to the tank. It was crushed. We've had to replace the pipe that went from the tank to the distribution box. So that was crushed and broken in several places. What kind of recourse do we have, if any?
So again, the standard is you have to be able to prove that the seller had actual knowledge of the defect. One scenario is, right, they were aware that there was a baffle because that's what they saw and that's what their septic company told them, but they were unaware of the other issues. And that would probably be their defense. But you would, in order to have a claim against them, you'd have to prove that they had actual knowledge of those other issues. Maybe talking to their septic company who serviced the septic tank and ask them, were they ever called to do any other repairs or did they ever get any estimates to do any of that work and decide not to pursue it? But it's a very steep hill to climb because you have to prove that the seller had actual knowledge. Mm-hmm. I'll just also say that you probably would want to check in with your attorney as well. Does that answer your question?
It does. Unfortunately, the attorney said the burden of proof is basically on us.
Yeah.
It's hard.
It's very, very difficult to prove that any of that knowledge existed at this point. And we're pretty much stuck with an astronomical bill for fixing a septic system that, when it backs up the day you move in the house, it's very difficult
brutal.
To
that
problem.
The other potential tip, is that there are certain counties have small claims courts. And those standards are a little looser, you could try to make a small claims.
The thing is, though, I don't know this for sure, but it seems to me that if you were to take this to the logical end, which would be in a courtroom, the expense would be more than fixing the septic
Correct.
System.
Well, the small claims court, an individual can file.
But this sounds like more than a small claim, though, doesn't it?
Well, you could take in a small claims court, you can file an action. There's just a cap of up to $5,000 in damages. Mm-hmm. So, you could have a $30,000 problem, but you can only recover up to $5,000.
What I would just like to add is, it's any home that's not a brand new home, and even a brand new home, and I don't know why these aren't being sold here more regularly. When I worked in a different market downstate, home warranties.
Oh, yeah, you've mentioned that.
We've mentioned this before. Shows. It's, it's a $500 to $600 home warranty that you purchase with the house. And, typically I have the conversation with my buyers, hey, guys, it's the first year that you move in that things go bad.
Yeah.
Whether the refrigerator goes or something goes, this home warranty will help protect you. It will cover, many of the appliances, some of the HVAC systems. It may not replace everything, but at least it will help you with some of the substantial costs in getting those repairs.
That's
so
such a horror
to think
show,
about.
Though. I mean, the first day you move in.
Yeah. And it is. And it's unfortunate because it really is hard to fight that. I tell everybody, once you close, once you walk out of that closing table, out of that closing room, it's almost impossible to get anything done.
Well, I think the other tip for other buyers who are listening who have septics is, there are companies out there that will camera the line.
Yes.
Right?
And do a good inspection.
To properly inspect the septic system, you not only need to pump it, but you need to make sure that they're dumping sufficient amount of water into the tank during the inspection to determine whether it's going to back up.
So if you're buying a house with a septic, then that would be a standard thing to do?
Absolutely. You should pay $400 to get a really good septic inspection, septic-specific inspection.
So it's a separate inspection.
Okay.
And don't cheap out on the home inspectors. I know people are trying to save money and they want to, they're buying a house, they have all these closing costs. The home inspection is really something that could help you potentially avoid some of these issues that we're discussing today.
The number here is 800-348-2551. Renata Lewis and Alex Monticello here. And let's go to Tina in Albany. Hello, Tina.
Hi. I'm a prospective buyer, and I was wondering if there's something more I should expect from my real estate agent other than receiving automated emails tailored to my, what I'm looking for.
Hmm.
Well,
you mean like a birthday cake? Yeah.
Communication?
Don't be snotty there, Alex.
Maybe. Be kind of looking, I don't know. It just seems like a lot of people say this, and it seems like it used to be that, more personal, like they would be checking out things for you. And I'm just wondering, is that just the standard now?
It really shouldn't be. I start with all my buyer clients. We sit down, we have a buyer consult, we talk about your needs, your wants, all of that good stuff. But at the same time, we really discuss on, you know, what the market's doing, how we're going to proactively work together as a team to help you, mm-hmm. yes, see all the automated links that you're getting. And on the other hand, you know, we as agents, we talk to a lot of different agents that we collaborate with, what else is coming on the market, and, you know, maybe even something that may be hitting the market that we know a little bit in advance than anybody else. However, really just communicating, how are you feeling? Are you driving by the houses? Are you looking at them? What, you know, what do you like about the neighborhoods? You know, it should be a, you know, weekly or biweekly connection and a conversation to see what's going on. And, you know, obviously viewing homes together, evaluating the homes, not just the values, but, you know, neighborhoods and what may need to go into them. So it's a process.
Okay.
I tell everybody we're going to start a business, you know, we're going to build the business relationship from the beginning to the very end and onward, because we really want to, you know, do right for you. And if we ever have to resell the home for you, I'll have a good conversation at that point as well.
Alex.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with a lot of what Renata said. I think one of the best ways that a real estate agent can help find other homes is by networking with other realtors who may have properties that are coming on the market. But even then, oftentimes those agents are they're not gonna be willing to do showings or accept offers until the house goes live on the market anyways, so they can maximize attention and value.
And email's an efficient way to let us know.
It's hard hard. I think it's worth putting in perspective that it's really hard for somebody to uncover a property that's not going to be online or on the MLS that they're going to be willing to just sell to you and not advertise to the public market.
Communication is key, though,
but,
right?
But regular communication, certainly I would imagine you have their cell phone and have direct access to them to constantly be checking in.
All right.
Okay.
Thanks, Tina. We appreciate the call. Alex, do you get people, your clients, some birthday cakes?
I don't get them birthday cakes, though.
No? Bottle of booze every now and again?
I don't get them usually bottle of booze. Maybe fruit or granola.
Oh, really?
Or nut butter.
Really?
Nut butter.
Right?
Well,
if you're lucky, I'll add you to the list.
It's a public radio sort of thing, isn't it? I got you some nut butter. All right, let's go to Patricia in Albany. Patricia, you're on.
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. It's very interesting.
Well, thank you.
So my question is, my daughter's considering filing bankruptcy, and she's in her early 20s. And my question is, how will that affect her in the future as far as getting mortgage? And how far away from the bankruptcy would that have to be in years, so to speak?
Okay.
You know, in my experience, I believe it's 3 years. Is that been your experience, Renata?
3 years and a good lawyer.
3 years and a good lawyer?
Yes, because there is ways that an attorney can help you remove that bankruptcy quicker, or at least not have it be as, I guess, high up on the scale of that bad credit. I don't understand it completely, so I can't really explain it. Go ahead, Alex. He's shaking his head.
No, but I think also you could call one of the local banks and the lenders and just ask to speak to a loan officer and just ask them what their time horizon is if you wanted to double check it.
That's a good idea.
But in my experience, it's about 3 years before the bank would consider granting them a mortgage.
And
again,
during that time period, keeping the rest of your credit good, because that's going to reflect, that's all going to balance out.
This one came in via email from Yvonne. I plan on putting my house on the market this early summer. It's an older hybrid farmhouse in good shape and has lots of character. What's the best way to prepare to show, and in terms of staging, painting all the rooms white or keeping the neutral colors I already have, which make it feel warm? A color question. White or neutral? I thought white was neutral.
Yeah, right. I think maybe neutral is maybe slightly off-white, right?
Okay.
I think it's probably good. It's probably good if
I like flat better.
You like white?
You like?
I like flat paint.
Flat paint.
Yes. I don't like the shiny.
So I think the neutral colors will work.
I mean, I think
you don't have to have it all white.
No.
The most important part is less is better.
Less stuff inside the house.
Just you're packing anyway. I tell everyone, you're going to be moving. Start packing. Put it in boxes. Depersonalize it. And it just makes the space feel a little bit bigger. Remember, the buyers are not purchasing the things inside the house.
Yeah.
They really want to envision the space.
If the house is really filthy, should you paint the whole thing black on the inside?
No.
You should clean
it. You should clean it and you should paint it.
Hey, does anyone ever paint their inside of their house black?
I've seen rooms that are painted black. Yes.
Bedrooms.
Yes.
Oh, that's interesting. All right.
Give it a try, right?
Maybe we'll have the people who are burying on their property call back in with that. Joyce and Troy. Joyce, you're on.
Yes. When I buy a house for cash, is there any reason to see a realtor? It's a neighbor's house.
You want to buy the house for cash from your neighbor?
Right.
Well, a realtor will give you an idea and give you, you know, you still should go through a home inspection. You still should do an appraisal to make sure that whatever you're paying cash for it is the value is there. So a realtor will help guide you through the whole process.
Mm-hmm. Well, the house has been taken care of.
You also want an attorney as well, right? Because they'll research the title and the deed, and they'll also give you an opportunity if you wanted to purchase title insurance.
Uh-huh. Do I hire a home inspector?
Absolutely.
We just everything that we've discussed today, unless it's a brand new home, and even a brand new home, I would always suggest getting a home inspector in there to just walk through it. You never know.
Right.
I mean, it could be maintained beautifully. It could be well taken care of. You know, when you move in there and something comes up that's significant, you want to make sure that you protect yourself.
Where do I get a property condition disclosure statement?
The seller would provide that.
Sellers should provide that.
Now, they don't legally have to. In New York State, they can give a $500 credit in lieu of providing the property condition disclosure statement.
Mm-hmm. Correct. I don't want the $500 credit. I would like the disclosure statement.
But as we talked about earlier, don't put too much stock in those statements. You know, ultimately, the home inspector is really the important check that you have to verify the quality of the house.
Is there any other questions I should be asking that I have failed to ask?
The attorney, I think, is definitely, if you're not going to work with a realtor, and you definitely want to do a home inspection, and I would highly suggest getting an appraiser in there.
Yeah, and you can also, you know, get a copy of their deed, their tax bills, understand do they have any special exemptions on their tax bills, which may artificially make their bills look lower. But if you're next door, you have a rough idea what the taxes are.
Well, Joyce, good luck.
I have a rough idea about that, what the house is worth based on other houses that have sold on the street.
Okay,
That is, I think, a pretty good thing to know.
Well, thank you for the call. Good luck with that. Do a lot of people buy houses with cash? Bring the old suitcase in?
I would say more so in the last few years than I've seen in this area. When I worked downstate, obviously it was a little different animal.
Yeah.
You know, cash does speak volumes. However, you still have to protect yourself. Just because you have cash doesn't mean that you're, you know, you don't have to worry about everything else that's involved.
All right, Renata Lewis, how do people find out about your exciting doings?
Yay, check me out on renatashomes.com.
And Alexander Monticello.
You can learn more about us at MonticelloNYS.com.
Well, thank you both for being here. Support comes from Empire Exhibits and Displays, Mechanicville, New York, providing custom display solutions, interactive exhibits on rental gallery walls for special events, museum installations, and trade shows nationwide. EmpireExhibits.com. Wild Bird Junction Backyard Nature Shop, Delmar, offering wild bird seed, bird feeders, houses, baths, and gifts, announcing Nurturing Nature fall activities for kids ages 4 and up this Saturday. WildBirdJunction.com. The Hyde Collection, an art museum and historic house in Glens Falls, New York, open Tuesday through Saturday, 10 to 5, and Sunday, 12 to 5, HydeCollection.org. And Lakeview Orchard and Farm Stand, 94 Old Cheshire Road, Lanesboro, Massachusetts. Peaches, plums, apples, pumpkins, apple cider, homemade cider, donuts, pies, pastries, kapusta, galumpki, and pierogi, LakeviewOrchard.com. Thanks again to Renata and Alex for being here today. Thank you for listening and for some terrific and some very odd calls. We appreciate it. Our engineer has been Zach Malloy. Phones were answered by Carol Lapani, our producer Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, the gardeners return to answer your questions. Right now, stand by for news.